You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, one of the co-hosts of this wonderful show. And I told you guys at some point we would be doing a podcast, a second kind of weekly podcast with me and Tony, or just, I don't even call it weekly, the second podcast. We teased you all week that we were going to do it earlier. We didn't do it earlier, but now I'm joined by Tony East, a man who is better with his cash considerations than the Phoenix Suns.
I knew you had to do a TJ Warren joke. I wasn't sure what it was going to be. That is perfect. Yes, that, I mean, obviously in the moment, but I mean, every day he just makes, TJ Warren just makes that trade look worse and worse for the Suns. I mean, what a ridiculous game.
Well, I mean, let's just read his stat line first. Let's start there. So he scored 53 points on 20 of 29 shooting, 9 of 12 from 3, four free throws. So I saw some stat. He's the only, him, Steph, and Claire, the only guys to score 50 in the last year with less than like 5 free throws a game. In a game or attempted in a game.
Wow.
He had 19.
Quite the crew.
He had 19 first quarter points. I want to say he made his first, what, 7 to 8 shots at least?
I think he had 19 in the first and fourth.
Okay. And then he scored 29 in the first half, a Pacer tie for the Pacer record with Jermaine O'Neal and Reggie Miller. He is now third all time in Pacers for most points in a single game.
NBA Pacers history, yes.
Yeah. The ABA, I think.
McGinnis had 58 in the ABA. Irrelevant, keep going.
Yeah. And so I put behind also Jalen and Reggie. And more importantly, he basically brought the Pacers back in the fourth quarter and single handedly sealed the game in the fourth quarter.
Insane three-pointers in the fourth, one in transition to grow their lead or give them the lead, I forget. To grow their lead to like 8, and then a mini run by the Sixers got it close again, and then just pulling up from 30 feet to get to 53 to get the lead back to 6 and clinch the game. And it's so weird because when he was so hot that like you just knew it was going in when he was shooting in the fourth. You know, there was – like you, when we were talking before, Adam mentioned this correctly, and Quinn said this on the show too. Like in the third, he kind of looked flat, and you wondered, "Oh, are his legs out from under him?" But in the fourth, all of a sudden, you just knew. Like,
yeah, once he hit his first, he hit a floater first, and then he hit a three, and it's like, "Oh, okay, he's back."
He was back. And it was on Ben Simmons too, a great defender. TJ Warren could not be stopped in this game. It was one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen from a Pacers player.
Yeah, so oddly, I remember the Jermaine O'Neal 57, however much he scored, 57 was, I want to say, a game, only because I remember he scored 29 points in the half. I was like 7 when the game happened. But 29 points for a Pacer player when they were scoring 70 points a game was like incredible.
J.O.'s was 55.
55, right? He had 29 in that first half, and he was he didn't have a three-point shot then. He was basically all twos and free throws for J.O. I mean, he was hitting like 10-foot baseline shots the entire time. But no,
yes,
I mean,
he had 18 two-pointers and 19 free throws.
I think what made Warren's more critical, I remember from the J.O. game, they blew out the team they played. I want to say they played the Timberwolves, but I'm not 100% sure. Whoever they played, they basically smoked. But this game, like, they needed every point Warren had. He basically took his points, the bonus points, and brought in points per game all in one.
Shout out to iPacers blog for putting all the comparisons of Reggie J.O.'s and TJ Warren's high scoring games together. So in Reggie's 57 points, Adam, guess how many free throws he attempted?
In Reggie's, probably 8 to 10.
23.
20. Okay, wow.
In his 57 point game, Reggie attempted 23 free throws. In J.O.'s 55 point game, guess how many free throws J.O. attempted?
Had to be somewhere in the high teens, and I was way off.
Prior. 25.
25, wow.
TJ Warren's 53 point game, 4. I mean, he just made shot after shot after shot. It was one of the most ridiculous scoring performances I've ever seen because it wasn't the free throws, right? Embiid for the Sixers had 41. That's a ton of points. But he had 10 from the free throw line, and it didn't feel like he was scoring that much. Warren, almost all his points were from the field, and it just felt so different and so – it made the offense look great. It was so encouraging. And honestly, there were a lot of, like, holes in the Pacers' offense that we're just not going to talk about today because Warren just was that ridiculous that you didn't even notice it half the time.
Well, he should have had more for this. A couple times he got to the rim and got kind of shoved down. They didn't call it.
He had the one where he hurt his elbow that – they didn't even call a foul.
Yeah, where he hooked him. The guy completely hooked around him anyway.
Yeah. That's another thing. He got hurt in the middle of the game and still.
It was his non-shooting elbow. It's
right.
Fine. It was his left hand, I think.
Clearly, it's fine. Yeah.
That was Quinn's joke in the broadcast, I think, was. Oh, well, at least it's not his shooting arm. What's odd is this isn't like. So when he hit his first, like, I think 7 or 8 shots, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like not surprising. I mean, we've seen him do that before. We've seen him have 12 of 15, 13 of 15 games. I think what was surprising was he just like. just kept it going, right? It wasn't, and then he started adding in these like deep threes, which I thought for me looked like his 3-point shot just looked, I don't know if it looked different or better, or maybe just in this game, obviously he made 9 of them, but like he just looked like he was, I feel like before this like 4-point break, he would a lot of time take that 18-footer, 17-footer and be settled for that. And this time it seemed like he was really trying to get, in a position to take a 3-point shot, which was different than usual.
Yeah, 12 attempted threes for Warren, which
it felt like a little bit of an improvement insane. In terms of his spatial awareness on the floor. I don't know.
So Mark Monty tweeted this during the game to remind everybody, but also me. I was on this call and I completely forgot. McDermott earlier in the summer mentioned like TJ Warren's been working on his range, and this was the first game, literally first game we've seen it manifest. And yes, he has been working on his.
Yeah, range. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but if this is TJ Warren's range, I mean.
Oh no, we can get ahead of ourselves. That's the next part of this conversation, right? I mean, this is that's what I talked or asked him about in shoot around before the game. It's like, this is your first important stretch run of your career. You know, with the Suns, none of the last 8 games of his career ever mattered, and he never made the playoffs. Like, this is so new for him to see this in his first, down the stretch, important game ever. I mean, that's insane. And if this can, there's no reason to expect more than whatever, 25, 20 points a game from Warren on a given night. But if he can be this level, yeah.
Plus a night, that's really good. That's elite level status.
If he can carry some of that deeper range shooting with his skill set that he already had and continue to be this level of scorer, I mean, that took pressure off every other Pacers starter. I mean, that's a guy in the playoffs. That is a useful player to have.
If he's putting up.
Now, again, we cannot set expectations for TJ Warren in the playoffs because he's never played there. But it's hard not to get your head of yourself after 53.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Warren, which we've sort of talked about before, is he's only 26 years old, and it seems like every single year he gets better, and he's at the position where, it pays off even more, right? He's at the perfect position where he can play the 3-4, which he played a lot of 4 today if you watched, especially on the defensive end. I mean, because he's guarding Simmons sometimes. So I thought he was kind of playing power forward for them. If you're a 3 and you keep getting better, it like exponentially leads to like you're vaulting up the rankings of players, right? Because a really good 3 is better than pretty much any good position anywhere else on the floor, I would say, right? I mean, it's pretty close. Maybe a really good shooting guard can match that, but that's about it. So it's just like if he can keep this up, I mean, he's not going to score 53 again, but if he can be a 20-25 point consistently this next 8 games in the playoffs, I mean, and does that going forward, I mean, that's locking in your small forward of the future kind of play.
Yeah. I mean, Bojan never had like this kind of thing. And I wonder I wonder how much of this is like Justin Holiday started, right? Brogdon didn't play. We'll probably talk about that tomorrow. Or for Monday's show, we will talk about it tomorrow. Anywho, you know, with Justin out there, they had that click more of space too. How much did that help Warren just fly around, have open space? And they'll have that space with Brogdon too, but I do wonder, sans Sabonis, you know, if we're going to see more of these games from Warren or any of the guards because they have just a tiny bit more space to do their thing.
Well, it did seem like pretty much every starter, maybe not just Holiday, but of Aaron Holiday, Victor, Warren, mainly those three guys, each of them had an opportunity where they got to the rim pretty easily. I'm getting a lot of one-on-one opportunities, a lot of ability to take guys one-on-one to the rim. Now, Aaron didn't convert late to the late fourth quarter. Vic had a couple times where he missed the shot went up, but they had the opportunities more than I think we've seen. You know, it used to be you had a kind of a screen and roll, but it seemed like both, it was kind of like they could space out enough or it's just one-on-one. Right. No, actually, because one thing to them is Mr. Bonus, which is pretty obvious, obviously, was the screens, right? So Bonus is their best, you know, screen
and roll. One of the best player. In the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, him and Brogdon had like the most points per possession on pick and rolls or something crazy like that, right? I mean, it was almost a guaranteed point every time that play happened, which is ridiculous in itself. So, but you saw that the spacing was just like, because you could turn on the corner, and he obviously didn't play that much, so it ended up being some version of Jakar Sandin, which means it might be able to work with Sabonis actually in the future. But there's just like that tad more bit of room because everybody's a 3-point threat when they're on the court.
Yeah, it was a delight to see, and the passing was good for the starting group. They had 17 assists as a unit, and with none of those came from Miles, right? He wasn't really asked to pass ever. He never is. But
I'd say half of those came from Aaron Holiday, or more than half.
Yeah, he played really well. Well, should we just cut and talk about other Pacers? Not immediately, but that was to say, like, they could move the ball well with the space they had too, right? So it was good to see those guys be able to fly around off of each other and into space and be able to thrive. And, of course, one of them took the most advantage, but he was so hot that, like, all they did is just give him the ball. Just literally give him the ball.
So. I think we should stay on Warren for another minute because, I mean, we can't underestimate. I mean, he's the guy scored 53 points. We've done this podcast for 3 years. There's never been a Pacer player who scored this many points. We've got Vic has scored 40. Warren got pretty close to like 38. Vic has probably scored 40 twice, maybe. I don't exactly know for sure. We've never seen a performance like this. I mean, like
that was the best individual performance we've had since we started the show.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
Sabonis had some amazing triple doubles. I guess that Vic 47er was like overtime clutchness, but this one was clutchness too. And I mean, yeah, that was definitely the best scoring performance we've seen, and maybe the best overall performance that we've seen since.
Yeah, and I mean, as Pacer fans, we haven't seen a guy play like this since Paul George, probably in the 2013 season when he had a couple 40-point plus games. Obviously, since JL's 50-point game. 15 years ago now. I mean,
what was Paul George's career high with the Pacers? Did he ever get 50?
No, he got somewhere in the high 40s, though. He had a couple games. I don't remember how many it was, but I know he scored 45 in a game at one point. That's what I know.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. I mean,
he had a lot of games where he had like 45 points and 12
his
rebounds.
His Pacers high was 48.
48, okay.
So there you go. DJ Warren, best game than PG officially. And he played pretty good defense, too. I mean,
that's the thing I wanted to say is he was. I mean, I was going to say this earlier, what makes Warren a little better than Bojan is his defense and his ability to actually like.
Oh, he's much better than Bojan.
Now. Yeah, I mean, he has a much better body type to play.
Much as extreme. Faster, he is a tier above Bojan in players now.
Yeah, he has the kind of prototype frame and speed to be a decent defender too. Like Bojan doesn't quite have the speed enough or isn't quite quick enough to be a really good defender. Warren arguably could be. He just needed some kind of coaching and a better kind of system. And I mean, to see where. Basically, he went from being kind of the good stats, bad team guy to now good stats, good team guy. And that's a huge.
The Pacers got him and a high second for $1 million. Like that's a ridiculous trade. That is just a ridiculous trade.
Well, I mean, it shows the prowess and the smartness of Kevin Pritchard, to be honest. I mean,
apparently the Suns, J. Michael reports that the Suns were just like shopping him around, like, you can have him.
Well, I mean, that whole offseason.
Good on KP to take it.
And we're not talking about last offseason, right? I'm completely thinking it's been so. I feel like it's been 2 years, but it's really just.
Really? No, it has been. It has been 13 months since the Warren.
Think about. I mean, I would say that Pritchard has hit on two of his three offseasons. He's been the Pacers, right? I mean, he's success, right? And you could say the second year one was half good, half bad. If Vic didn't get hurt, they would have been fine, but Terry Gavin wasn't great, but he didn't bet on long term, so it didn't really matter. But like,
yeah, he's had a lot of great summers.
For two of the three ones, he's hit on players who, before they came to the Pacers, were considered okay players. And when they came to the Pacers, all of a sudden became like, not superstars, but who knows, Warren, but like borderline mid-max guys, right? I mean, you talk about a guy like Bojan who couldn't even get 4 for 50 and then was making 20 plus million a year by the time he left the Pacers. I mean,
yeah,
it's consistently, they just do a really good job of kind of scouring the league for guys they think will fit here and can be coached to their system and then developing them. And I think a guy like Warren, it's different than Bojan because he's a little younger and he just has the ability and when to hit free agency that, I mean, I don't think they'll have to pay him whatever considered. He keeps playing like this, obviously. But
here's the official list of 50-point scorers this season, Adam.
Okay.
Harden, Lillard, Beal, Kyrie, Giannis, AD, Trae Young, Chris Middleton, Caris LeVert, Eric Gordon, D'Angelo Russell, and now we add TJ Warren.
I mean, that was not that impressive of a list, actually. I mean, is, but there are some names in there that aren't that impressive. Like, I mean,
LeVert, the last three, LeVert, Eric Gordon, and D'Lo are like, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, D'Lo you could see, I feel like, right? He just
Yeah, mostly LeVert.
LeVert, Eric Gordon, I kind of.
Great tweet also. TJ Warren is the NBA's all-time August leading scorer. Did you see that?
I did see that tweet.
That's super good.
yeah, I mean, he was pretty much hitting from everywhere tonight. I mean,
everywhere.
The only time he looked like he wasn't scoring was when the Lays got tired. And it seemed like in that late second quarter, at least, that for a little while, Depot was like, let me take some shots, give you a breather, and then just Warren didn't have anything left, basically. And went to him. He hit so many straight shots in the second quarter. But, I mean, his three-point is not going to be 75%, but if he has that range, his three-point in that ability to sort of cut out the 20-foot two-point shot in his game, I mean.
Indeed.
He's already 18 point a game scorer and he's a little more efficient. That's 20 right there. And he might get a few more shots, but that's a bonus. And that's like 23 or 25 game all of a sudden.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does against the awesome defense of the Washington Wizards in the next game.
Yes. Okay. Let's take a quick break and let's talk about the other guys who impressed us tonight. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Sports are back, and that means MyBookie is back. If you've been waiting since March, and now that it's that time of year, MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime, game-winning shot all wrapped in one. You'll love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Hopefully baseball will continue. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season can begun. Maybe you can bet some future Pacer bets to win a first-round series. I don't know what those are at, but that might be worth looking at. But why stop with just basketball or baseball? You can bet on football when it returns. Hockey came back today. You can bet on that. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite sports. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today, and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus the toss in a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is type in the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. All right, Tony, so I think – overall, I mean, there were a couple of pieces who had pretty, I would say, garbage nights, but everybody else kind of impressed me. I mean, you don't have to talk about them too much, but Miles Turner and Justin Holland obviously were not very good tonight. Give them the benefit of doubt. Turner never did as well against Embiid, and Holland just had a bad shooting night.
I don't even want to say benefit of the doubt. Like, Turner deserves criticism for not being awesome against Embiid ever.
He's always against Embiid. I mean, it's just
In the absence of Sabonis too, right? That's what we talked about. Like, they're just going to struggle against Embiid without Sabonis especially. It's just going to happen. I do want to give a shout-out while we're on Embiid, though, to one guy who I think played really well and did a shockingly good job on Embiid, and you know who it is. Jakar Sampson had himself a game. I mean, he had the fouls and struggles for a 6'7" guy guarding Joel Embiid, but Jakar Sampson is a fighter, man. He played pretty damn well.
Yeah, he made it tough for Embiid. For sure. I mean, he scored 41 points, so let's be clear.
Really made it tough, but he did better than any other option.
But literally every time Embiid plays the Pacers, he scores 40 points. It's whether you can hold everybody else. That's also part of it. Right. Or anybody else besides, you know, we really need like two guys to really pop to have a shot to beat the Pacers anyways, most of the time.
They made
it tough for Embiid.
Everybody but Embiid did not score well for them. But yeah, Jakar really, I mean, his offense kind of struggled because he used so much energy on defense, but I mean, I think he deserves a lot of credit. And he really had a wide base, pushed hard, not let him back down. I didn't think he'd be the first guy we talked about after TJ Warren, but he truly played a fantastic game. He deserves a ton of credit for showing up and proving like he is for sure the backup center, probably for the rest of the season until Sabonis returns. Like, probably not even Goga because he's good at this.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if they'll give Goga a run when he comes back eventually.
Maybe in the regular season, but not the playoffs.
But if Goga shows something in the season, they'll give him a shot in the playoffs.
Right, for sure.
But
we can go on other guys. But while we were talking about Miles' struggles against Embiid, I wanted to give Jakar his fair shake because he was very good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see how that works with that bench unit without he has to be really good on the kind of the screen.
Yep.
Basically the way Sabonis was, because that's the one thing Sabonis has just as bad of spacing as Jakar. When it comes to it, but what Sabonis does is he makes up for it by just being this incredible screener and ability to pass the ball. Now, I don't think Jakar's going to get the ball as often, but he has to be able to set the screens to get McDermott open, to get McConnell to get kind of off, or, you know, to get McConnell open lanes to pass the ball to, you know, cutting shooters and all that time. So that's what he's got to do. But tonight, I mean, and then he's got to play hard on defense, which he obviously did a really good job tonight. I mean, I think even in Embiid scoring 41, he made him work for it. And I think that might be the reason to be – I think got a little hurt in the fourth quarter. I think he was pushing Embiid pretty hard. I mean, not only he hurt Embiid, but he pushed him to a little bit of his limits, I guess, might be the right way to put it.
Definitely. You talked about the bench. I mean, we could talk about them later, but it's hard to read the bench in this game because with all the fouling and the way they handled Vic's minutes, it was so jumbled. We never saw a really good full bench unit. But we can get back to individual players if you want to highlight anyone who you thought played well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the next highlight is Aaron Holiday goes 15 points, definitely. 10 assists. I mean, that's the kind of game – and 5 rebounds, sorry. Go on with that. The night he had tonight is the kind of night that he needs to have every night when he's
– Every game.
Every game, pretty much. Now, he'll have less assists because when Barton comes back, he won't be in the main point guard position. But, I mean, if he is a 50% shooter and, you know, can basically almost put up as many assist points, probably not quite that much, but, you know, a 3-2 ratio kind of thing, like 7 points and five.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Some of this is TJ Warren hitting everything, but if Holiday's assists matches field goal attempts, perfect. Yeah. You can fit in the starters just fine.
And he'll shoot a little better from three, I think. I mean, he didn't just tear 1 of 3, but I think he'll more likely to make 2 of 4 a game or 2 of 5 given him.
Yeah. But I was really, and especially, you know, not to to just be box score people here, but some of his buckets in the fourth quarter were really important too, right?
Oh, like his two layups were huge.
Embiid, I think, came out or was about to come out, and he had two great drives in control. He kind of read the roll man and paused and looked off the center both times. Two huge layups to cut the Pacers' lead. They were losing at that point. He got him right back in it.
To me, this was the first night, and I've seen a little bit. This is the night where I'm like, oh, he's an NBA player. Like, he's a legitimate rotation player tonight.
Because you just said that. I always feel that way when he's passing well, that he feels a lot more like an NBA player than when he's just so focused on his shot.
Yeah.
Like, in January, I thought he was a pretty good player. Then I get lower on him because he goes on these streaks of just chuck, chuck, chuck. And then he has games like this where I'm like, okay, that is the blueprint for him to be useful and good for a long time. And I wish he could be this more consistently because this player was phenomenal.
Well, and I think the thing, too, to remember is when he plays with the starters, he's put in check more. I mean, you even saw him in that exchange with Miles Turner. I think where Turner said something about him. What was it? Scrimp a pass or something on the screen, whatever it was.
Got in their bicker?
Yeah, was it on defense? Right?
No, they were on defense, and there was a foul on Turner. But my best guess is Turner was just upset about a foul, and Aaron was trying to tell him not to be upset.
Okay. But I'm just saying there's
– I don't know. Nothing came from it. It doesn't matter.
But when he played at the start, he kept a little in check, I think, more than he would be when he's with the bench sometimes, or even when he's not – he's going to play at the starters the rest of this – I mean, I'm going to assume the rest of the regular season. I'm just assuming Sabonis isn't going to come back at this rate. So hopefully that will help him be a little more pass-first focused, I guess, because that's going to be the key for him is – he's got to be willing to give up the ball because he's going to be around too many good scorers to take every shot. I mean, he can take, you know, when he has the opportunity on one-on-ones to go to the rim and do that, keep doing that constantly. But he's got to be willing. He's got to be able to look for the guy that's hot at the moment. And some games he'll be the hot player and they'll go to him, but he's got to have that trust that when he's hot, he'll get the ball. When he's not hot, he's give it to other guys and so on.
He read the game very well today for a sophomore especially. And another big thing for him, we haven't even said this, only one turnover. With how much the ball is in his hands, that's pretty crucial too. The Pacers in general, very good low turnover game.
I mean, it did help that the Sixers don't really play a point guard.
That is true. And the one they played, Shake Milton, A, played terrible, and B, gotten a legitimate beef with their best player. So that's probably not a good move if you're a fringe NBA player.
I mean, so that's – foremost another player which we can talk about is I think we should talk about the Sixers just like – I don't know. I mean, if you would have bet a team that was going to look – and they didn't look that bad then. I mean, they had moments where they looked really good and then kind of fell kind of out of it at times. Really giving up a lot of easy buckets at times when they really had a big enough lead or whatnot. But, like, the Sixers, man, they just, like – if you had a bet a team that wasn't going to be up to the challenge in this bubble, they would be probably the favorite in that – of those teams that are here that are competitive, not just, like, the bubble playoff teams, but, like, the really competitive teams, I guess.
I don't want to hype up Embiid too much, but, I mean, he was amazing, but, like – when he's in the game, he has an impact on possessions that he's not even involved in, right? Joel Embiid was in this game, he played 34 minutes. They outscored the Pacers by 21 in those minutes. Like, he was unbelievably dominant. And then as soon as they have to do anything else, they have to have Horford in there. They have a different pairing on the inside, or they're more guard-focused. They're just bad, and they don't know what to
do. The team makes no sense.
They don't know what to do. They can't get a good look, right? Tobias Harris did really well this game, but a lot of his points – came off of drives when guys are hesitant to leave Embiid in threes. And that's good. He played well. But, yeah, they just didn't really look like they had an identity when Embiid was out of the game. And 34 minutes for Embiid is fine. But, like, we've seen he's kind of not a total glass cannon, but close to that in his career, right? So they have to monitor that. He was injured, earlier this week. So,
yeah, but he still played 34 minutes and
14 minutes, and they get outscored by 27. Like, that is – they had some issues. Yeah, well, since we're talking about Philly, Pacers officially clinched that tiebreaker too, which is huge news.
Yeah, that was. We'll do that probably on Monday's podcast. But yeah, this game.
More depth on that, yeah.
This pretty much, I mean, this doesn't seal it, but it gives them a two-game lead with seven games left over.
Yep. Which is huge. And they have three pretty easy opponents coming up. So.
Yeah,
but anywho, I agree with you that they just – like, just something is off. They just don't have the ball handling, really. Like,
they're
like
going to have to move
Simmons
somebody.
Is an awesome ball handler, I guess. But, like, because he can't shoot, there's only so much he can do with it. So,
and they use their cap money to double down on a guy in a position that they don't really need.
Some of it was taking him from the Celtics, but doesn't matter when it's not helping you win.
So. Celtics were actually, I think, almost willing to get rid of him because they could have just been Kemba. That's true.
It worked out well for them.
I mean, they're going to have to make some moves, but that's beside the point. It's not a Sixers podcast.
So back to Pacers players in general. I thought McConnell played pretty well. I mean, he usually does. But, you know, his energy was needed when they were looking lethargic in the third quarter. they had their moment. The Pacers are back moment of, for me at least, was when they went 7 minutes with only 3 points to start the third quarter. But McConnell came in and really gave him a spark, and the bench was really useful for that stretch. They got McDermott going with a nice dunk, and McConnell himself had 10 points, which for him is a lot given the way he plays. 8 assists. He was good as usual, and he knew some of the Sixers' plays, which was nice. So seeing him have a nice impact is a sense of normalcy. And McDermott 2 days ago said that basically, even with Sampson in for Sabonis, obviously the bench will be worse, but like, so long as they have McConnell to provide energy and get guys open, they're still going to be good. And this game was more evidence of that. I thought he played very well.
Yeah. I mean, the McConnell McDermott, well, they had that really nasty, was it kind of an off the ball screen from McDermott where he was cutting him and McConnell basically hit him and drew him up for the dunk. I mean, they just,
someone replied to a clip. I posted a clip of that dunk, and it was pretty funny. I didn't even notice this in the moment. Embiid is standing between McConnell and McDermott, calling out for help, pointing that McDermott's about to dunk and doesn't move. And then McDermott dunks. It's like, hey, maybe you should be the one to slide into the basket.
But no, I mean, McConnell, his steal, he scored in both his steals too, which is pretty big. I mean, that kind of at moments. Yep. I think they both came.
So created the Warren three on that one of them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought he scored on both. He had the steal from Embiid. Or maybe it wasn't kind of a steal when he knocked Embiid with three and he knocked.
Oh, yeah.
That might not count as a steal. And then he had the one, obviously, like early in the game.
Yep.
Both, though, were big and sort of helping. I think they were when they needed the buckets pretty badly. I mean, because there were stretches here where the bench was within, when the bench was out there and Embiid was out there, they were getting crushed, a lot of it. And yep. There were real moments where, like, this game could have gone to a 10 or 15 point Philly lead and it just been enough. And I think something that interesting about this game was, I think with it being a neutral site, it felt like momentum was much harder to grab for either team. Now, obviously, Warren grabbed the hot streak, but it seemed like a lot of back and forth, right?
It did. It definitely did.
Like, you just don't have that crowd kind of pumping you or silence that kind of motivates you. And so it felt like at any moment, any team could go off for 15-0 run pretty much just because of that.
Right. Yeah, that's what makes the McConnell minutes so important. I mean, they actually got outscored in McConnell's minutes, which is funny, but just only by three. And the fact that he's able to – keep the steady hand no matter what the situation is even more valuable when it's impossible to grab momentum. Just be steady.
Be real. McConnell McDermott got dragged down by playing with TJ Leaf for a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, man.
Leaf played 8 minutes because Jakar and Turner combined for 10 fouls in this game and couldn't handle Embiid. Leaf did some rebounding stuff that was nice. Had a sick dunk on Embiid, actually. But, yeah, he just doesn't. Not an NBA player, yeah.
He couldn't even hit his open three. I mean, it was just like...
It's two open threes. It's deflating. Like sometimes he'll like fight for a nice rebound and kick it. Who did he kick it out to? Oladipo, I think, for a three.
Yeah,
I think that was his, one of his assists. It's like, okay, that was good. That was the right play. But then most of the time, it's just not there.
He's just not athletic enough, it feels like, at times.
I thought he would. I didn't think he'd be good, but I thought he'd have more skills than he does. Whatever.
Well, I thought if he could just be like, if he goes 6 of 7 tonight or 5 of 7, right? You're maybe thinking, okay, maybe he's a borderline player, but I thought he could just be a good enough scorer to be on the court, right?
He hits one of his threes. He has 7 points on 7 shots and was fine enough on the glass that you can
get
8 minutes. That's fine.
But he can't consistently go 5 of 7, which he would need to do to stay on the court. Like, that's right. You look at McDermott, right? McDermott's on the court because, I mean, he's also got a couple of different skills that are better than McLeish.
Best cutter on the team.
Yeah. But I mean, but like McDermott almost every night's out there going 4 of 7, 5 of 8, and then occasionally going 8 of 8, right? Kind of thing where like, and then he occasionally has a 1 of 9 game, but like that's a rarity, right? Where like Leaf can't even get to that point where he's just consistently putting 10 points a night on really efficient shots. But I will say too, the other thing that I noticed is the defense, and it wasn't obviously great because Embiid had and Harris had a ton of points. But in terms of being able to get turnovers, it felt like the Pacers were kind of back to their pre-Vic injury self with getting deflected and stuff like that. It felt like a lot more.
They did get a lot of
flying around.
Yeah, just in general. Only 8 steals, but I do agree with you that it felt like, the Sixers had 21 turnovers. So,
well, they had a couple of times where they would like knock the ball out, but they wouldn't get it. And there's just a lot of like,
right.
The ball was constantly being flung back towards half court line, I felt like.
I agree with you for sure. It felt like more hands than 8 steals, right? That's just the number that.
Yeah, it's still more than their season average, though. I think it's the average.
Yeah, like, yeah. Sevens. They definitely felt like they were trimming on D. And I think if we're talking about their defense, because we're trying to fill out this segment before we talk Vic, the zone, going to zone, getting creative.
That was
a way to stop Embiid. They gave up some threes from it, but they've been talking about they've been practicing that. And you know, if the Sixers went 3 for 3 from deep immediately after going into it, but the fact that they were able to do that and force the kind of shots they were trying to force is encouraging, even though they, again.
Yeah, the zone got beat pretty hard. But
it got beat quickly because Alec Burks hit 2 threes right away, but I think that they were willing to do that is super interesting and noteworthy for a wrinkle they could throw at teams later on.
Yeah, I mean, the zone will have to figure out if they place remember, Philly is one of the biggest teams that they'll play. I mean, they're one of the biggest teams in the league. Really, that's something.
Kalen was right about this, too, is they played a 3-2 zone to try to make it corner three specifically because of the way the Sixers play. But then you have Miles Turner who has to run out from Embiid under the basket all the way to the corner to defend the shot. It seems like a 2-3 would have been better against the Sixers specifically just because Embiid is so massive under the basket.
But think about it, too. How many other teams are as big as the Sixers? I mean, the Pacers are
none.
There inside.
Basically none.
The Pacers are
right now. The Pacers are.
No, but normally I'm saying normally,
right.
So like
very few. Portland is like the only one that comes to mind.
This is a weird team in terms of just having to play. I mean, they're just
definitely
just because they're not there. I mean, now especially they're playing Simmons at the four, who is basically 6'11", I want to say 7 feet almost, and Embiid 7+. You know, then you had Harris. You know, pretty much they started every guy in the starting line was over 6'5", I think, something like that.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought was interesting was this. We talked about it a little bit, but like the Pacers being forced to go super small. And the fact they scored 127 points, and I don't know if it was the defense, it's the break, nobody playing defense, whatever kind of thing, but like, and just Warren being really hot. But they took 34 threes, which I'm pretty sure is way above their season.
Six shots above the season.
Right, and they made 14 of them.
Or five, whatever, a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot more. And it seemed like when they were succeeding, they were playing faster, and that's something they don't usually do. They're not normally a really fast team.
Without Sabonis, they're allowed to play faster, which caters well to the four perimeter players in the starting five, yeah.
Yeah, because with Sabonis, what makes him successful is their half-court game. It's kind of a McMillan thing, is he's been really good at the half-court game. And at one point, remember, they were going to play fast 2 years ago, and they pulled back because their defense was so bad. At times, they were running Philly off the court with just how fast they were playing.
Yep. I think we got to talk Depot, Adam.
Yeah, no, I think it's time. Let's take one other break, and we'll talk Victor Oladipo. So we've avoided it. I don't know, because we both have positive reactions, negative reactions.
Because Warren was so good, we could talk about something else. Finally, we could talk about something else.
So my thing with Vic is, I think there's one thing I think you said this in the press conference. I think you tweeted it out, actually, was how Vic feels tomorrow is going to be key.
Yep.
Right? He played 32 minutes, his most by far this season. I believe he
only
played
time over 30 since legit the injury, which is
I'm pretty crazy. Sure he played 27 or 28 against the Celtics right before the
almost 29. Yep.
Right, he got pretty close. So we'll see how he feels tomorrow. If Vic feels good tomorrow, it's a really good sign. I don't think he's going to play in both back-to-back games, but I think if he feels good tomorrow, he'll play in one of them. Just because I don't know why you would play him in both anyways. Like,
I'm glad you're looking ahead at him, but I can't believe you went from you start there instead of, hey, Victor Oladipo played in this game.
Well, hold on. I was getting
huge
there.
Huge news.
I was going to get there, and I say what was that was the foreline. The encouraging thing about him tonight was he scored 15 points. He was willing to defer, and he looked like he was trying to get to the rim, that we did not see in the preseason, which we saw today. He's still a little off, but he looked like he was getting there at least a little bit.
Yeah, like we're not going to see awesome Vic performances, but this shooting, 6 of 14, so 43% would have been better than like 60 or 70% of the games we've seen from him this year. But that's not even the big thing. Yes, 7 rebounds, passed well, played good defense. They outscored the Sixers by 9 points when he was in the game, which some of that is lineup stuff. But, you know, he wasn't hurting them, which was what he was doing for a long time when he started with this team. And just in general, right, that his second bucket, maybe his first bucket, that layup where he just flew to the rim, right?
Yep.
We haven't seen stuff like that from him a lot of the time. And it was – first of all, just great that he committed to playing after this entire saga. So weird. We'll have to circle back to this after the playoffs are over for the Pacers. Because
he looked too good. I mean, he looked too good not to play. He looked good.
What the hell? But, yeah, he looked fine. He always talked about how it was a response thing. And I thought when he practiced and did shoot around that he was going to play, even though I'm not allowed to, you know. That's just pure speculation. But to see him actually play fine, be a useful player who didn't even – shoot particularly well, you know, if he can get a little more of a shot going like he did against Dallas, especially with Warren as a nice 1-2 punch, like that's a player. And just having that Vic, which is already, and he did it in more minutes, right? That this player is so useful to have, even if it's just at this level for the rest of the season compared to the Vic they had for the 13 games of the regular season.
Well, and so you watch him too. His mid-range game was pretty good there. I mean, he had a nice couple, 8 to 10 foot shots where he was kind of cutting and dicing and kind of back and forth to get the space for kind of a nice little jump shot, which usually was kind of a key to his game before, was his ability to hit threes, to hit in the mid-range, and then he could kind of push people to the rim and whatnot. And I do think, I mean, I said last segment, but I mean, there aren't many teams that have a center like Embiid, that kind of center who can really challenge Oladipo at the rim the way other guys can. So I wonder if he gets to play against kind of a weaker center crop, if he'll be a little better around the rim. Because he definitely was getting there. His touch, he had a couple of times where he just didn't quite get off the glass correctly. And I saw somebody put this down on Twitter, I think it was Jared Wade, and I kind of agree with it, is he wasn't quite getting the elevation around the rim the way he usually does, but he was getting to the rim and he was getting the shot off, which was better than before, where I think he felt like he couldn't even get to the rim, or was so off balance by the time he ended up at the rim that it was just a terrible shot. Like, most of his shots, I would say, were good shots that just didn't go in.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Nothing felt forced, which is something that he didn't really force, but he had a few shots every game when he did return. That I
hope he didn't need to, because the guy who was 40 times making all of them.
Right. Yeah, that's too.
Just pass it up.
It's got to be pretty easy to play with a guy who legitimately can't miss. But yeah, Victor deserves a lot of credit for playing better. And I mean, this is like it's hard to set expectations for a guy that you don't even know if he's playing, first of all. But it's hard to set expectations for a guy like this, because the circumstance of only playing 13 games in 19 months is just ridiculous. So it was hard for me to figure out what he might look like. But I think that this is a reasonable baseline of like what you can see coming from every game, right? A little bit more points and shots, can get his own look up. Going to shoot more threes than he used to, still effective.
Smart defensive player, too.
Very smart defensive player. Yeah, he did a great job on – can we talk about Josh Richardson, his main matchup, having 4 points in 29 minutes? I mean, that's pretty impressive, if you ask me. So, yeah, great game. Great as a stretch. Pretty solid game from Vic, which is it's great considering where he's at and where he's been, and the fact that, you know, he decided possibly not to play, and then we made it to this point. I'm so glad – I mean, obviously, like you said, there's a chance he doesn't play in one of the back-to-backs, especially if there's even the slightest bit of soreness or feeling in that.
I mean, game. I wouldn't – even if he doesn't, why would you – I just wouldn't play him back.
Just sit him out against the Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, just because you could beat the Wizards with literally TJ Leaf on the court, I think.
Yeah, they are not
– I'm going to eat my words tomorrow.
They're going to lose now because of you. Didn't they get waxed by the Suns today? Or yesterday?
I don't know. I try to only watch certain games that are a certain level of quality, and when I see the Suns or the Wizards,
they lost by double digits to the Suns. Yes, so okay. Not great. But yeah, I was overall happy. I'm glad that after the game too, he said, you know, I can't commit. It'll be how it feels tomorrow. But he did feel good, and the fact that he, you know, again has practiced every single day in the bubble, did all the scrimmages, all that stuff. His health seems good right now, which is huge. It's just a response thing. And if he can play at this level the rest of the way, I think the Pacers have nice quality, pretty good starter.
Yeah, and I think
– with potential to be much better.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a chance he goes – you know, there's a game where he goes 9 of 14 and has 23 points, and that's huge, and something like that. I also
If Warren is reflexing some shots back to him too.
If he can play 6 of these games and then play in the full playoffs – and just play at this level or even slightly better or even slightly worse, it's going to be huge for his confidence going into next season too. I mean, there's a reason that like some guys want to return to NFL seasons even if they're not in the playoff contention or whatever, because you want to feel like you can play at that level and not just start a season not knowing, right? I think that was his biggest concern has always been is how does – nobody's ever had this injury before, so what does it mean to recover from it? What level can he get back to? And if he plays like this level – for 6 to 8 games, I think it shows him that if he just keeps kind of working at it, he can definitely get back to his pre-injury self. Because I think there's nothing – doesn't feel like anything physically stopping him from getting to there. It just mentally causes some hurdles, which is always the hardest part of injuries is that mental hurdle. But it helps with that mental confidence if he keeps playing this
way. And mentally is the hardest part for us as viewers and analysts to figure out, tap into stuff.
But like if he consistently plays these, like, you know, he'll know from these, like, let's say they play 13 games or whatever, and he plays 11 of them or something like that, right? Or, I mean, that's being – low end if they don't win a playoff series. It gives him the confidence to know that, oh, I'm as good as these guys in the court. I have to just figure out where to kind of pick my spots with going to the rim and whatnot and figure out how to get over that hurdle of being fearful about the injury. But, like, I know I'm as good as a player as I – or 80% the player I was before the injury, so that's a good sign, right? It helps. I mean, instead of throwing him in the middle of a season where everybody's already been playing 50 games, is fresh and ready to go, it gets to kind of get a restart and gets to kind of a level playing field, which is kind of important for him.
Right.
So everybody's gonna be rusty.
At time of recording, his future status still unclear, although I'm almost positive, and by that I mean 99% sure, given that he played in this, that he will play at least in some games going forward. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think they would have played him 32 minutes if they didn't think. I mean, I think he felt good, right? He's not just going to go out there. I mean
his minutes restriction was 28 to 30. It was only two extra minutes. Like, it wasn't
crazy. You said it best when, like, they played him nine straight minutes in the first quarter. Like, almost McMillan forgot about it.
Yeah, I was shocked. There was 3 minutes left in the quarter. I was like, Vic's still in there. And then there was a timeout, and he stayed in during the
season. I was shocked about that, too. I mean, I think the fact had to be that Turner screwed up the whole whatever.
But I will say the way the first quarter went, right, they were down like 10 to 3, and then all of a sudden they were up by 10. Like, I think you just keep in what's working until it stops working, and then take him out. That makes sense.
To be honest, I mean, from watching him, he looked pretty good. I mean, if you throw him with this new look Pacers, this is the kind of game I would expect him to have. I mean, like, we have to, and for him, it's going to be weird. I think that's a little bit weird, but like, he doesn't have to be the, there's so much more offensive talent around him than there was last year when he was on this team that, like, he doesn't have to be the guy. Like, he can, can, if he put them consistently 15, 18 points a game, you're solid. And then he just has a couple huge clutch nights and he can still be the kind of closeout guy, although, but like, this team doesn't necessarily need him to be the 20-plus point of guy again right now because they've got too much offensive talent to need it. They just have to be really good on defense, be the leader on defense, which he sort of was tonight.
I agree, and it's again, just great to hear him, see him play, see all that go down smoothly, which was awesome. And we still have lots to get to next time we talk, but I think the key part of saying next time we talk is that we don't know about Depot's status going forward at this point in time, so that's a big thing to monitor with this team. I mean – Not a huge deal. We know he's probably going to play again at some point, likely very soon. But just that's something to monitor, is that if you come back to this, we don't know that. But, really, really encouraging first game and a lot to take away. It's hard not to overreact to one game. I'm excited to have more information.
I do wonder, too, how much not having to fly helps injury recovery.
That's a great point. Especially concussions, if someone gets a concussion.
Yeah. Well, the flying can just be brutal for any injury because it's – elevation. When I mean that was the big thing about back-to-backs, and it's kind of like being a home back-to-back now. It's like, does it make it easier to recover because you're not doing as much traveling? You're not even having to you can pretty much probably go from your locker to your bed within an hour after the game, right? You got media, but I mean, obviously you're probably not going to, but like, you have the ability to pretty much like relax right away. There's no getting on a team bus,
right,
on this, going to the hotel. It's like, it's just a much quicker.
You're just chilling with your teammates too, you know.
It's like within an hour you could be sitting somewhere having a beer theoretically.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Or CJ McCollum's wine or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of like Michael Jordan and all those on the last having a beer with the Miller Lite with what was it? One time after the East Conference Finals, right? It was him and Scottie Pippen and like Rodman sitting in the trainer's room doing that. Like, that's the thing they can kind of do, right?
Right.
You pretty much relax.
Monday show stuff we'll get into for those still here is like Brogdon's surprising injury, Turner's performance in general, right? What he can do against non-Embiid players and the rotation. I think that's kind of stuff we need to touch on. But, I mean, beating the Sixers, pretty good start to the bubble for the Pacers, I would say.
And we'll preview some more of the games coming up because they got a big week, a lot of games.
Big week, lots of games.
Playing lots of games and lots of
action.
Yeah, and they got weird times, but I think everybody wants to watch them. I mean, this is exciting. It's good to have basketball back from Thursday on. It's been really exciting game every night from the, Mavs, Rockets, Clippers, Lakers the first night, and Jazz, Pelicans the first night was also really good. I mean, just lots of good games. Exciting to have basketball back. Exciting to have some sports on in this time of year, especially usually when August is such a dead month because you really have kind of baseball in the high days of summer and there's no football yet and whatnot. So
I would say baseball should not make it dead, but baseball might be done by the time this podcast ends. So we'll see.
That's really morbid, but well, basketball seems like they're doing it right. They have a bubble there, nobody tested positive, but knock on wood, nothing will happen. Hopefully nothing will happen.
Geez, no kidding.
I think my dog's gonna come running out of the bedroom now. I did that. So let's finish up quickly. So that is all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll bring you another podcast tomorrow. So look for that one. You can follow Tony at Teased NBA, me at FreeMadam5, our podcast at Locked On Pacers. As always, I bring you 5 podcasts a week, so look for that. That's all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys tomorrow.